Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Rich Wilson and welcome to an extended edition of Insane in the Membrane. This time, ever the genial hosts, Comedy Central give us a room in which we talk to Dane Baptiste.
Insane in the Membrane.
And the only thing is they do pick up the phone. So we have to fully go airline safe or whatever it's called. Mike Skinner used it as a term.
Flat mode.
Yeah, I went flat mode.
Right, I prefer airline safe.
Airline safe works, man. There's a new phone. I can't find where that is.
Oh, I got it. I put mine's now airline safe. But I need to make a note.
But it's flight safe mode, isn't it? Are we flight safe mode guys?
Are we start? Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to get it airline safe. That's it.
I don't know why airlines say it, because they don't really, can't really check that intensely whether or not your phone is airline safe.
No.
I don't really think it affects instruments, because at that altitude, you don't get reception anyway. And the thing is, sometimes it's good to take a break off that shit, as I'm learning, which we will discuss.
It's just nice, isn't it? Just to have some time out.
Take a walk in your own head, man.
Oh, dude. I've been reading a lot more since the internet, since social media, because I can't, man.
Yeah.
It does my fucking head in.
It's a global high school.
Yeah,
it's like I'm trying to explain to my friends is that the massive appeal of social media is that for a lot of people who don't have jobs like ourselves, the social paradigms that you got to observe as like adolescents and stuff, where you have like your immediate circle of school friends, might have some mates around the manor. You don't have that anymore once you reach a certain age and you're going to work, and basically your experience on a daily basis is normally commute to work, maybe commute home with a kid or family if you have kids, maybe spend some time with colleagues after work, depending on the day, and then you come home. So the opportunity for you to observe or even maintain relationships, be they platonic or romantic, becomes a lot harder.
Yeah, cool.
So social media allows you to kind of create this ideal fantasy and also provide a large amount of escapism.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a line of work where you have like a very menial job or you're working where you're essentially unfulfilled, then you know it provides great escapism. And what it means is that for a lot of people, as I'm sure you know, high school or secondary school is where they peak.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
so
definitely.
So trying to recreate that same paradigm is why social media comes in, because social media, you can be like, make incendiary comments, you can be a troublemaker for the purpose of attention seeking, as that is the currency with social media, and really the currency when you're dealing with adolescents anyway. Mm-hmm. Most adolescents' displays are on attention because, again, you're not earning, you can't make money, and you can't really affirm your humanity or your validity in society when you're an adolescent, because you have to go to school and most people tell you what to do. You can't vote, for example.
No.
So what you do instead is that, like, it's attention, displays for attention, whether it's alpha male displays because you're now going through puberty, or, you know, same as feminine ones where you're like, you know, trying to show your beauty, which is why when you look at somewhere like Instagram, all of the people on there, like, who are, I guess, being exalted, it's like, this person's attractive or this person stays in shape. We don't know about their journey, who they are, what their political leanings are, just that they look attractive. They have an aesthetic that's pleasing to us. And so therefore we follow them. And you only see that when you're in school. It's like the popular girl, she's like girl who was, you know, she's got the most curves, she's got the biggest boobs, or the dude who's got a car. We don't question any other, you know, their intellectual aptitude or like what their career is going to be. It's just that that person's popular in school because they show some promise in sport and they are aesthetically pleasing. So for a lot of people, once that ends and you have to enter like the world of work and stuff, then it's a lot more difficult. So that's why everyone wants to regress back to the same thing.
True.
Where, and you know, you look at Instagram, and this is why you have like all these splinter groups of people that, you know, you have there's a black Twitter, and there's like a white supremacist Twitter, and there's like LGBT social media, because again, it's usually when you're in adolescence, you're forced to stratify yourself along these lines, because this is how people contextualize their existence at that age. We haven't got the wisdom of experience. Because when you're a kid, you don't give a shit. And then when you're an adult, you realize it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But it's just this period of adolescence whereby you have the same, you have like the body and the secretions of an adult, so you have the same urges as an adult, but you still have the mind of a child. And it's a very fucked up time to be, which is why most people hate high school. It's like, yeah. It's like America, we hate high school. It's like, well, it's where most people end up getting fucking killed. Like, all knife crime is will happen to people among adolescent age.
That's right.
Like, you know, school shootings happen to people among adolescent age. Like, places like Bridgend, suicide is all adolescent age. It's a fucking horrible time to be alive. And so now, when you look at like how these images and aesthetics you're seeing on Instagram are so unattainable and it's so unrealistic and treated, to me, it's not surprising that now kids are calling themselves non-binary and gender fluid, because why the fuck would you want to live up or conform to this idea of hyper-femininity where it's like, I've got double D-cup breasts, but then I'm a size 6, but then also I'm completely hairless.
Yeah.
Or as a man, it's like, I'm a real man where I have a beard, but then I have no body hair.
Yeah.
Like, does that aesthetic just doesn't really work naturally. No. So it's not surprising kids are like, this culture, it's so damaging to me and generates so much anxiety. No wonder kids are like, I don't want to be either of these things.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because these binary extremes of hyper-femininity, of having like the complexion of a Brazilian woman, but being as hairless as an Asian woman, but having the bum of a black woman and as a guy, it's like, you know, you're supposed to be able to have a lifestyle which affords you all this opulence of like eating at like Michelin star restaurants and then having like the best cars. And then at the same time, you're also like able to pay attention to your body the whole time. Those dualities just can't exist.
No.
So people are just like, fuck it, I'm neither nor.
Yeah.
I understand why that culture, right? So I mean, just, and this is the complex that it's building for us. And like, I was just watching something recently where they're now saying that in a few years' time, in terms of like regulation and monitoring of the long-term effects of social media will be equivalent to that of smoking.
Wow.
In that like, we got to a point where we had to realise that we cannot allow kids and adolescent people to smoke because of the long-term damage it causes to them and a stunting to their growth, in the same way that like humanity are a social species, but in order for you to thrive within it, you need to be able to spend time in your own head and manage your own faculties, develop stuff like coping mechanisms so you're able to interact with people. So you're not moving into like, you know, these spectrums of either one end of the spectrum of neuroses, which is anxiety, which is causing, or you're so detached because you live within a false reality that you're on the other end where it's psychosis. And then you're seeing more start embers of that, because now if you have the benefit of anonymity, then you can go online and project this horrible thing and you can say, oh, you deserve to be raped, you're ugly. And you can all project all of these inner turmoil and project that onto other people because you don't have to acknowledge it. But being a troll is a really acute condition whereby if you're involved in this hostile environment for long enough, you will start to become very misanthropic and hate people. If you look on YouTube comments, you think people are pieces of shit.
Yeah.
So then, is what they say, is it Nietzsche? He's like, you know, if you stare into the abyss, it'll stare into you. So if you're looking at all this horrible shit on Twitter, it's gonna taint you after a while. In the same way that they put an AI into Twitter, and after a while they had to deactivate her because she spent so much time on this. She's like, I love Hitler and stuff like that. Because she's trying to develop a personality based on the algorithms of how people have discourse on social media.
Yeah.
Again, because that's a false reality, because people are able to be this even darker self or even entertain these darker recesses of their mind or these more taboo parts of their mind because they're not going to be accountable for it. But if you're looking at like an objective consciousness, like an AI, then all they're seeing is people being pieces of shit because they know they can get away with it. And then essentially, it's just following the same algorithm. Yeah, it's like, oh, this, because, you know, if you're an AI and you, so if you want to base humanity or your narrative on humanity, based on what you see in the world, you might think, okay, they're a social species and they move like most other mammals. If you look at social media and the fallacy that's projected, you're going to think that we're all like, you know, materialistic, oversexed, like, pieces of shit that never need to work but have the best lifestyles. So,
yeah.
I mean, as far as mental health, like, I don't think we even are aware of how much social media is going to affect people.
Man. It comes up a lot, actually, on the other episodes that we've done. There's always a mention of social media.
Yeah.
And it does, like with Jade, I mean, we've actually said to each other, look, don't go on your phone first thing in the morning.
Don't do it.
So if you wake up in the morning, grab your phone, your day's fucked.
I've had it so many times. And it took for me to be verified, for me to realise how deep it is. Because my whole thing was initially, it was like, it strengthens my resolve. I can handle it. I'm not scared of bullies. I'll be afraid of. But then you learn, like within normal discourse, even if I may be right, if I'm arguing and meeting somebody on the same emotional level, we're both shouting, even though I am right,
you
can't see that. If you're looking at us arguing, you're just looking at two people arguing.
Yeah.
So you don't know. So this is what you can't tell. So it's the same way that, like, if I'm having back and forth with people and trolls and stuff, if you go on my timeline and you just get a snippet of that, you'll just see me arguing with some random. So it got to the point where I realized people will deliberately try to goad you because now we're at a point whereby, because people are so immersed in social media, now you have a hierarchy within social media.
Yeah, of course.
So if you have a blue tick and you're verified, it's almost that you have some kind of, like, you're in a different echelon to people who are just on social media. So now people will attempt to try and, like, wind me up, or they'll say stuff to provoke you because they know if I respond, then you have a blue tick next to your name. It's like, that guy's responded and he's somebody and I've gotten him to be...
You're justifying
them. Yeah, you're justifying them. So now it's like, now I've realised it's kind of like... And that came from me, that more came from comments of me being like, I don't want to act like I'm better than people.
No.
So I will meet you at your level because I'm not scared or I don't pretend to be an elitist. But you realise that it's like, for professional purposes and also really just for the sake of having your own sound body and mind, people thrive off of this.
Of course.
And then what you and the mob are very fickle.
Yeah.
Because that's what we are on social media, it's the mob. You know, just because of how temperamental they are and how easily they can be swayed based on hashtags. And, you know, if you look in real life language, trends have always been, you know, something that has always been finite. So when we talk about what trends on Twitter and stuff like that and the outrage and backlash, like at one point, you know, curtains were a trend, or another point, moon boots were a trend. So trends, they come and go and they wax and wane. And it's the same way that people need to be aware that, like, if you pretend to, if you want to take a stance on a trend, then make sure it's one you stand by, because trends will change and your statements will still remain kind of etched in that world. And that's why you're seeing people now who said stuff very flippantly, very stupidly, because they were conforming or within a social circle. Like, you know, when people might say flippantly, oh, that girl's fat, when you're in secondary school. And then it's like, you know, years later, that person's like, you realize that gave me fucking bulimia. And then you're like, I don't know what I was.
Yes, yes.
And now people are dealing with that on social media. It's like shit they said before flippantly, not thinking about the magnitude to which this was going to grow, are now being fucked over based on the stuff they said. So I just think, you know, when people, the issue is now is that just there is a lot of people that feel they exist in some ideal incarnation when they're on social media. Yeah. And it really is not the case. It's like, so you know, they say opinions are like assholes.
Yeah.
Which they are. Everyone, and I say that because everyone's got one. But the thing is, like, there's a lot of things with arseholes. Arseholes also have a sphincter.
Yeah.
So that you don't shit uncontrollably. And you don't fart uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about opinions, is that the reason why you have a sphincter is because sometimes, like an opinion, if you fart in front of, like, anybody, you could really damage your, like, social opportunities. But whereas opinions, like a fart, is like that, if you surround people that know you and have a context for who you are, they might be like, oh, fuck, you know, Rich. But they know you.
Yeah,
so it's whereas if you do it in front of strangers, they'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with you, sir? Like, there's a certain level of... So opinions, like assholes, is like you can use them. Everyone's got one, but there has to be an etiquette.
Yes.
So that's the thing. And the problem is that, like, your brain works the same way, in that when people say I have no filter, what you're basically saying is that you have verbal diarrhea.
Yeah.
But people try and say it like it's positive. Like, I don't have a filter.
Oh, yeah.
You need a filter.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you have Tourette's.
Anyone I've ever met that went, oh, I've just been honest, I haven't got a filter. I'm like, you're being a bit of a cunt.
Yeah, you're being a cunt, yeah. And what it normally means when someone says, I can say that, is what they're saying is that I preemptively are going to say something provocative to you because it means that now I have a guard against my own insecurities.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they normally mean. Because when people say, I just say how it is, it's like, yeah, but you don't want to hear how it is.
Yeah.
You're just preemptively saying it before anybody else. So that's what I mean. You pick up on these lines that people say. And so, like, the thing with opinions now is that, like I said, your brain is supposed to have a filter. That's like your sphincter, so that you don't have leakage at your mouth all the time. And the problem is with social media is that it's now created this laxative where there's so much conversation going on that people can't help but be like, and if you don't have the etiquette, well, you're able to control, and we won't have it because we are adolescents on social media.
Mm.
But that's why I say it's like a high school, because essentially, and that's only because of the time it's been around.
Yeah.
So that's why I say, like, social media's been around, like, so from like MSN, etc. But really, the chronology is only, it's you know, we're in the teens, the amount of that's years right. It's been around.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I say we're like, and that means that our consciousness on social media is also teenaged.
Yeah, man.
So we're only learning now how to deal with it. So this is why people are saying shit, and now you'll find some people taking back stuff they've said before because they weren't thinking.
Yeah.
They've not run it through in their head, and now they say they can't stand by stuff. And we're seeing it happen to celebrities all the time. So it's so far as like the complex that human beings are dealing with now, I think the digital era contributes massively to that.
Yeah.
And it's not because of any particular reason. There's certain aspects of social media which really are just replacing media when it came through. Like when we say like video killed the radio star and
Just
digital media is just replacing broadcast media. That's just natural evolution.
That's right.
And there are a lot of advantages to that. But you know, like fire, that changed human life, but it still burns down houses and cathedrals and shit, despite how, you know, advanced we are.
Yeah.
But it cooks our food and keeps us warm as well. But we, over time, have had to learn how to manage this
exactly.
thing.
Exactly, it's how you use it that counts, yeah.
And it's the same thing with social media, is that it's still in its adolescent stages. So we still don't know the effects of it and how to use it. Like, because it could change with just like, because for example, when you watch television and you see something ridiculous, they have to give you the warning and be like, don't try this at home.
That's right.
Actors were used in this. Social media doesn't do that.
No.
So when you see like, so if we were to have some level of regulation, it was to say something like, you know, this model has used Photoshop or this person has used supplements, so that people aren't, especially children that have no frame of reference, are not developing a complex where they feel they have to aspire to this.
That's right.
When it's impossible. Yeah, man. So
that's where all the problem, like you say, you know, there's so, everyone's got anxiety now. Everyone's got depression. I've even found it myself.
Yeah.
When I've been, I commented on Twitter the other day about the Notre Dame thing.
Mm-hmm.
All I said was like, all right, how can they find, how have they managed to find 600 million in an afternoon? Yet we've still got people can't feed their kids and no one's stepping in to do that. And that's all I said.
Yeah.
And I made another comment going, look, I'm not saying we shouldn't rebuild it.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful building. But where's the urgency when it comes to actual people?
Yeah.
And a couple of comments I got like ruined my afternoon.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why is because, like I said, because we are a collective consciousness when we're having this discourse on social media. And that's just a part of your consciousness, like, you know, to use, if you want to use, like, I guess, a model, like a Freudian model of psychology, that's the id part of you, or the ego, the super ego part of you being like, you know, if we can help out in a humanitarian crisis, that should involve humans more than things.
Yeah.
Every person who has a concept of humanity thinks the same thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when you say something like that and you beat people to the punch, Rich, it means that then people have to now reflect on their own apathy.
Right.
So they become defensive because when you say something out on Twitter, essentially you're saying it to everyone.
Yeah.
So then you're saying we should all be better people. Now, when people have to hear that and some people within themselves are struggling with their own moral shortcomings, they're like, well, who the fuck are you to tell me that I should be a better person? Man. So you start bringing it out in them. And it's almost like you're kind of steaming them out. So it's not, you haven't said anything wrong. And even, I mean, right or wrong, but you know, nothing you've said is accusatory or anything like that. You're not mentioning anyone's name, but
someone,
you saying that is almost, it's the equivalent of like when, you know, you're on a train, you're commuting home, people, and then the dreaded sound no one wants to hear, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, because no one wants to be confronted with the fact that this homeless person, they're two or three paychecks away from being in that position.
Yeah.
And humans are a social species, whether we like it or not, and you don't want to be confronted with the desperation of humanity, because it's always going to take a part of it on whether you want to or not. So people are just like, oh, fucking hell, there's homeless people, why can't you get a job and blah, 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 blah. This person, the full well knows, are you fulfilled in your job? No. Yeah. Are you happy going to work all the time? No. Are you fatigued and tired and worn down by your job, which you probably a long-term find unfulfilling? Yes. So, but then they'll rationalize that by being like, but I have to do this in order for me to be able to have a house and tread water financially and pay my rent. So when they see somebody who like has deviated from that, then there's a part of resentment there where that person's not having to work. So this person isn't stealing directly from me, but I'm resentful of the fact that I have to work and I'm unfulfilled. I can't project that onto the powers that be because I can't see them and I don't know who they are. And also, I'm so beholden to them in order for me to get paid. I can't defy them. But this person, they're just scrounging off the world and blah, blah, blah.
It's easier,
It's easier. It's much easier. In the same way that, like, you know, rich people will not be blamed for the fact that 10, 11 years ago, you destroyed our economy and now you're reporting profits, even though we bailed you out.
Yeah.
Now, if you're any person who's right wing or you're Tory or you believe in, you're a Republican and you believe in a free market, then as a majority of shareholders, before banks can say anything, we should be getting profits.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones who bailed them out. So we run those banks. We own those banks. That's by financial terms. But no one will say that because people are so attached to the idea of capitalism is that they would rather excuse that because it's much easier, rather than to mobilize the poor, to aspire to be able to have that is much easier. Because that's what the dream is. Everyone's like, you know, capitalism is a faith-based system, whether people like it or not. It's not airtight. It doesn't work. As we're seeing, it doesn't work. So they're like, but the money God says, I can be like that too. If I keep working hard or I play the lottery and I scratch the right card, I'll be this person too. So, these guys, they're just lazy, that's why. But it's just very hard for people to confront that in the same way that, like, you know, during with chattel slaves, during slavery, like in America and stuff, they used to make slaves dance and be happy and make them smile at the expense of their lives. Because if these slaves' faces reflect the human misery of being forced into chattel, you see that, that's gonna fuck you. In the same way that, like, you know, we're all like, cool, we are freedom fighters. Another example is we're all freedom fighters. We're sending our coalition of the willing to occupy Afghanistan and Iraq. We're supposed to be beating tyrants. So then if we are fighting the good fight and we're virtuous in our actions, why are soldiers coming home and killing themselves? If what you're doing is virtuous and you believe in what you're doing, but it's because the humanity of having to take the lives of people you don't know and being surrounded by carnage, you are going to bring that home with you whether you like it or not.
That's right,
So because more people from Vietnam died from taking their own lives than died in Vietnam. And since then, 70% of all homeless people are war veterans. So you have to ask yourself, these are people that have had Operation Enduring Freedom, these are people that are protecting our freedoms, and then they come back and they are so scarred with our experience, they are not able to thrive within society. Because homeless people are, homeless is a socially created species.
Yeah.
It's not like there's not enough homes to go around, and it's not like there hasn't been historically a certain level of care.
Yeah.
But whatever these people's trauma is, whether it's from infancy or recently, there is a part of their head where they can't thrive within society keep up the pretense that they can operate. So they are in the streets. So for me, it's like, then now we have this paradox socially where it's like, oh, people, I cannot believe, you know, people are burning effigies of George Bush and it's insane and we should buy poppies and you should celebrate the troops. But it doesn't matter how much poppies I buy if this guy is still going to be on the streets.
That's right, yeah.
You know, if you want to support, it's like, why aren't we supporting our troops? But then how can you have the duality of you want to support troops, but then you want to privatise the NHS? Those ideas can't work.
Yeah. So what makes with that? What the other thing is that with these people that give themselves for their country, and then once they come back, they're like, all right, yeah, see you later.
Yeah, basically.
Take care.
Well done.
And they're done. But you know, in my mind, I mean, it's a shame that we have to have armies and war. You know, wars are fucking bullshit, but we have them, and people give their lives over to them. I think when you come back, you should be set for life.
You should be set for life.
You've given your life for the country. So the country just go, we'll take care of you from now on.
Yeah, yeah. Someone who's a civil servant who gives themselves for the betterment of society, we should set them up for life.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'd even wager though, Rich, even if someone comes out, you could give someone £1 million. If they have PTSD to the point whereby they can't thrive, no amount of money saving them.
No.
And this is, so decompression is more of the fact that, like, people observe so much of the depths of humanity. Yeah. The lines have been blurred in terms of what is good and what is bad and what we hold to be moral and what to be amoral, that you become so detached from humanity, we can be surprised as people are taking their lives.
But, you know, we do a thing, to work for CSE, doing gigs with the troops, and they do a thing called decompression, where they were coming back from Afghanistan. And instead of, they were coming straight from the war zones, they were going straight home.
Yeah.
And they were killing themselves, or they were punching their families around, or they were
going crazy,
kicking off in a supermarket. So they brought in decompression the first decompressions that they did, carnage. Because they turn up in this camp in Cyprus, they just chuck slabs of beer out amongst them, and the lads would just go mental. And then amongst that, us comics would have to come out and have some sort of a show where you've got Gary and John just punching lumps out of each other.
And they're crazy. Because you will never see a greater display of lack of humanity and apathy than in war.
Yeah.
So when you experience that for long enough, you come home, you're so detached. And that's the thing, like, even when we talk about stuff like suicide and stuff, suicide doesn't always necessarily refer to the idea that people don't want to be alive. But if you are dealing with a certain level of trauma, or you're in a situation where you feel so detached from humanity, then you know the natural inclination is, what's the point? It's not that I want to die. It's not the intention of dying. It's just I don't feel like I'm here anyway.
Yeah.
And so this is why, like, people that a lot of times suicide survivors who survive suicide attempts, like Richard Pryor, for example, is like, as I'm burning, that's when you feel this. The survival instinct kicks in.
Shit, what am I doing?
Because then you feel alive.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know people like, you know, if you look at that spectrum of like, neuroses, which ends with like something like suicide, then at a reduced level, you've got like self-harm.
Yeah.
And you know, and a lot of times with self-harm, people, because you want to fucking feel something.
That's right.
Not because you necessarily want to harm yourself, but it speaks just to the fact that psychologically, there's a lot more complexity to any muscle in our body. But the way we have like physical gyms, we don't have the same mind gyms.
No.
So and that's testament to the fact that it doesn't matter how attractive or aesthetically pleasing you may look to society, if your brain feels fatigued or is dealing with stuff, people don't mind cutting themselves and provide and hurting themselves, because I just want to feel something.
It's true, man.
I just need that shit stimulated again. So for me, a lot of time it's like, you know, I historically before I, and that's come from me having, because I wanted to get involved in the creative industry. And for me, it's like, I revere what we do is because we're taking concepts which are intangible and I can't read your mind, but you give me a narrative or a stream of consciousness, and you, and on, to boot, you make it funny as well.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the laughter with comedy and it being the best medicine, the reason why it's the best medicine, I guess, even though he's used it figuratively, is because, you know, it doesn't require like a dosage.
No.
You can't overdose on laughing.
No.
You know, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to, you know, find a vein.
Yeah.
You don't have to like have a dosage. Like, it can just, and again, like music, you don't need any kind of orifice for it. It just goes in your ear and then you process it in your brain. And that's why the payoff was always like, he's saying what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And for human beings, that relief that you are sharing a commonality with somebody on a, not just a physical level, it's so important.
Yeah, man.
And people don't understand. And that's why, like, even people my age don't understand. It's like, everyone wants to be desired sexually and stuff like that. But there's going to come a point in your life where just being able to wake up in bed will be more important than who you bring to your bed.
Yeah, man.
And that longevity is something that we've kind of missed.
Yeah.
So and so for me, like, all this kind of discovery was a process of me having to unlearn shit that society's taught me, and just how to take that whole your time with your critical thought.
Yeah.
Which most of us have, because that's developed over millions of years. So most of us know better, but it's just we suggest that we have to do things differently
and try
and conform to this thing, because we just want to fit in, and this is how.
It's having the confidence to go, actually,
I
need to turn myself out of this. This isn't it. Like you say, society is telling you one thing, and you're inside in your soul, you kind of go, you can feel it. You go,
you can feel
it's
it.
Not right, man.
Yeah,
this ain't right.
You can definitely feel it.
It's having the confidence to go, I'm out of this for a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm only gonna find out. And it's funny, you talk about, you know, being sexually attractive and this and that. You don't think about any. You don't think about my nan is just about to turn 90. And she was so active. She was driving, she did this, she did that. Now she has to have someone come around in the morning to get her out of bed.
Yeah.
Like, because her knees are fucked and she can't. And I see that and I'm like, fuck, man.
It happens.
We're worrying about the wrong things. You got to protect yourself from the future.
And you know, I know that's such an important thing. And I was saying to my friend yesterday, is that, like, you know, everyone has bad relationships, or you'd be mistreated by a partner and stuff like that. And you think that person has fucked with me and they deserve to feel the pain that I felt. But the reason why you have like someone like Shakespeare saying that all's fair in love and war is because the parallels between those two experiences is that, like, innocent people get hurt. There's collateral damage.
Yeah, man.
People that don't deserve it get fucked over. You become scarred by your experiences. You become detached by your experiences. You become so much pained by your experiences. Sometimes you want to commit suicide. Sometimes there's massive highs. Yeah. But on the whole, you are, it's like, you know, inevitably there can be no longer a long-term winner.
Yeah.
But really, like, I was saying to my friend that, you know, if someone has to observe mistreatment and they have to observe pain for them to do it to other people. So that's what they say, like, hurt people. So normally if someone's in a relationship and they're mistreating somebody else, it's more a reflection of their own personal shortcomings. Because why would you, if you're confident and you know you're attractive and you're appreciated by everybody, you wouldn't need to behave or make someone feel inferior to you. Like, I haven't got to pick up, my nephew's 10, I ain't going to pick on him. I don't have to like barge him when I'm playing football because it's very clear I'm his physical superior anyway.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to prove. In the same way that if someone has to mistreat somebody in love or they have to be defensive, it's more about you than it is. It's like when someone, where you see, like, sometimes it's quite flippantly shown, like, oh, a less attractive person says to somebody, oh, you're good looking, and they're like, oh, well, whatever. Like, how are you offended by somebody finding you attractive?
Yeah.
Irrespective of how they look, the fact that they are given that part of themselves to exalt you, only if you're insecure yourself or you've been in a position whereby the power status has changed where you've tried to appeal to somebody, they've not been interested, would you behave that way?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're like, oh, cool, thank you, whatever.
Yeah,
because
you
never have to turn away from compliments. But so people have to observe that. So I say to my friend, like, at the end of the day, these people, like, people that want to mistreat people, whether or not they think so, they like it, or they can mask it with their ego, it will seep into them and they will have to deal with it. Because like I said, once you get to a certain age when you can't move and all you have left is this is going to be the strongest muscle you have. And you spend most of your time in here, you might want this to be uncluttered because at some point, whether you like it or not, you're going to have to spend some time in your own head.
Yes, man.
Even if it's the last seconds before you go to the other side, you'll have to. And you don't want to be there and you want it to be a comfortable walk.
Yeah, man.
Because
yeah,
we want to take a walk outside of our own heads. You want that shit to be a comfortable walk. So this is why, like, gaining your mental faculties and stuff as early as possible and performing mind exercises, not just taking a walk in your own head.
That's right.
Like,
man.
Even stuff like taking the time to interpret what your dreams mean. Because that's all projections of your subconscious.
Yeah.
It's so important for people to do that because, like, we talk about like, living with regrets is tough, but trust me, living with that internal conflict and trying to like have your, because your ego, and your, because I think a lot of times, especially with younger people, we confuse pride and self-esteem and they're not the same thing.
No.
Because people will try and mask with pride and they're too proud to acknowledge when they're wrong or they're too proud to, you know, concede defeat. It won't be your it won't be good company when you're older.
No.
Your ego, you feel like it protects you. It will be your worst enemy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be your worst enemy as well. When you're like, oh, I'd have to put up. But it's the same one. It's the same one that's like, oh, yeah, you look good. You'd have to put up with this and you can get any person you want. It's the same person being like, nobody wants you because of who you are. It's the same voice that's going to be telling you the same thing. So
it's funny. All this shit behavior, it does come from you.
Always.
Every time. I've found this out myself very recently where I had certain expectations of the relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it was cool to me to get. I was like, I'm being mugged off.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
being mugged off. I'm not having this. This is bullshit.
Yeah.
I expect this, and this, and it's not happening. And then I was like, hang on, yeah, why am I bringing this?
Because you've been mugged off before, and you're afraid, and if you see certain pathology, you don't want it to happen again. So that's not like, you're not a bad person, but again, you know, your self-esteem has been attacked. And when that is attacked, this is when your pride begins to seep through. So you're like, I have a standard, but I guess the ideal position we should all reach is that, again, love, like everything else, begins within yourself and it's self-perpetuating, or what we refer to as love. So once you're able to set that standard, that's supposed to be, because, you know, you're supposed to love someone always, like, you know, your relatives may have passed away, you could still picture them and still love them.
That's right.
Which means that energy can be created, or even the chemical, if you're scientific, even the chemical secretions that follow you feeling what we refer to as love, they can be recreated whether that person is there or not.
Yeah.
When you're in love with somebody, they don't have to be physically present and stimulating your five senses for you to still love them. So by that token, that same energy, because love is supposed to be an energy, or if you're a spiritual person, love, God is love, whatever. So that's not something you can necessarily hoard as a human being. You can harness it and you're supposed to use it like any other energy, because energy can't be created or destroyed. So you harness it. And one of the first things you're supposed to do is have self-love, which means you set a standard for yourself and it's perpetuating enough whereby if you give it to somebody, and they misuse it, you still have it within yourself where you're like, well, I tried to love that person, they didn't take it on board, but I still love myself and I still know how, and I know the goodness of love and how it works because it's sustaining me.
Yeah.
And it gives me a sense of, you know, self-awareness and gives me a sense of always seeking my own welfare so that I don't have to seek this energy from other people and thereby continuing, because then I'm just desperate for energy and I'm trying to, whereas if you have it yourself, you harness that, then it doesn't matter, you can love and you can be hurt again, you can keep doing it, you know, which is probably why you find a lot of time women probably excel at this a lot more than men because of a higher emotional intelligence and also some social engineering whereby it's given that women are more emotional and more susceptible to falling in love.
Yeah.
And then they have their hearts broken and somehow, you know, in the same way that like a woman has an abortion and if you are aware of the process of an abortion, you would, as a man, you wouldn't be fucking inclined to be having sex again.
No.
Whereas the idea is a woman has to have a child removed from her, whatever the trauma she goes through, to have sex again, it's a big fucking ass to get back on the proverbial horse. And the same way that a woman will have her heart broken, she's a woman, she's emotional.
Yeah.
But the emotional faculties to rebuild a heart and rebuild a mind when you've dealt with this ultimate rejection, they do it a lot more. Whereas a lot of time what men do is that if their self-esteem and their self-image is damaged by a loss of love, then pride tends to replace that and they start putting up in his walls and like, oh, I'm not going to care about any woman again. Like, love them and leave them, you get me? I'm not doing that. And like, because these walls are built because it's like that vulnerability is something that masculinity doesn't teach you to defend against.
Yeah.
There's no rep you can do or no bicep curl you can do that's going to strengthen your resolve to deal with heartbreak and rejection. You can't punch anybody hard enough. You can't buy a car fast enough. So learning the mental facilities to deal with rejection and to deal with loss of love and even the articulation of love is something that men are lacking a lot. Like for me, man. I think heartbreak was probably the best experience for me of becoming a man because your parents can't save you from that. No money can bail you out from that. You need to learn to be an adult and then you have to take responsibility for your own mind and your emotions and then steal your resolve where you're like, okay, I know what's like to have loved and to have lost. It means number one, how I felt, I will not visit that on somebody else intentionally.
Yeah.
And also it means I know how it feels and how I should give it to somebody and how important it is not to lose it. So you have to look at it as experience of when you get to experience that energy, it may not last forever, but it's something that, you know, people run away from it because it's so high risk and high reward, but it's not something to run away from.
No.
And also to have the awareness that love is not just romantic, you know?
Yeah.
There's love between your friends, there's platonic, there's love of your livelihood and your work that you can put yourself into.
Yeah.
And all these things are massively important because in the grand scheme of things, it's one of the only sensations that will transcend us when our physical bodies aren't here before.
Yeah.
And it's the same, and that same, and just to bring the, that whole, this whole rambling into like full circle is that, this is why people are online, because everyone wants to be validated. We're a social species, and our immediate reality may not lend to the validation we seek as a social species. So then we go looking for that online, and we try and be somebody, create a person that we think will attract more love.
We want to be important.
And you know, and love is a drug. We say that as well, but there are more reduced versions of it. And I guess attention and lust, and these are all just reduced versions of the validation.
Validation
are all just more diluted versions of what we all want, which is to be loved and to be revered and to just feel, as a social species, that our presence is perceived and welcomed by our human contemporaries.
Yeah, man. It's true. This is why human beings have this unquenchable thirst to find out where we come from and where we're going.
Yeah.
And to just turn around and go, like Ricky Gervais said it the other week, he's like, we're just here. We are just here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his belief. Yeah. And I agreed with it. I was like, we are just here. And there's nothing, you're never going to find out where we came from.
No.
You're never going to find out what's in front. All we've got is this bit here. You should make the most of this bit.
Yeah.
So all this looking for things, this unquenchable thirst, you're never going to quench it. You're never going to get there.
You won't. And one of the reasons we won't get there is because if you want to know where we come from, like humanity is everywhere.
Yeah.
So if we wanted to really, aspire to really find out who we are and where we're from as a species, then we would have to do away with ideas like nation, and we have to do away with ideas like religion and race and gender, because unless we become a collective consciousness, then there's no way, unless we are united, we're going to be able to again observe our consciousness and observe our narrative. And because if our narrative isn't united, or we haven't got a unified theory of humanity, which we definitely don't have, then you know we're going to find a unified theory to explain where we've appeared in the cosmos. And he does make a point. I know he's an atheist, and I think I'm more spiritual, more agnostic than Ricky Gervais, but I do see his point in the fact that, like, there isn't really an alpha and omega. There is, if you're a religious person and, you know, you do believe, I imagine, in an omnipotent figure or God, then your God is supposed to be an alpha and omega, and he's always been and will always be. But, and if we are made in his image, then in the same token, it's like there wasn't necessarily a beginning and an end, because by law of physics, energy can't be created or destroyed. So in the same way, so like when people say stuff like you can't live in the past, they make a point, but I think a lot of times that's people trying to alleviate themselves responsibility, because they're all, for me, it's all running at the same time.
Right.
For me, like your past, because, I mean, time is not linear, and that's any physicist can tell you that time is not linear. We have no way of measuring it. And I say that because we are experiencing our past, our present, and our future concurrently. It's all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And I mean that by the fact that, for example, you look at the sun, that's time travel. Because of the light years it takes for the sun's light to reach the planet, you are looking through a time stream, because it's older. So you're looking at the past then, technically speaking. Whenever you have a memory, or it's a shared memory with somebody, it's the same process. Because that person at the time, you know, depending on what you consider thoughts to be, and if you can pick them up, and if they are like, they can be transverse waves, or it can be music, or... Because when someone records something, for example, or they record their voice, like, they record that as a transverse wave, and transverse waves can't dissipate. They become fainter, or they become more spaced out. But there's like recordings from like, whether it's the 60s and stuff, they just keep going out into space.
Yeah.
Which means, again, so the past still remains the present.
It hasn't
disappeared.
Like ripples on a pond.
And then by the same token, because we do use a linear or decimal way of trying to measure time, whether we say, so we say seconds, a small measurement, but then you can go into like milliseconds and nanoseconds. That means that the present can't exist, because if me just uttering the word the present, several nanoseconds have passed, which means there is no present state to be in. So by that token, it means he's right. There are no real, having this kind of like past, present and future, and having this very limited way of thinking about existence, it doesn't really work, especially because space doesn't work in a linear fashion. It's, if anything, it's a wave and it's expanding and waves wax and wane. So it's like, you have to kind of embrace the time.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No, but I think for human beings to really be able to, grasp the human mind and really observe real mental health, then, yeah, the first thing they need to do is just become aware of and accepting of all of humanity.
Yeah.
As if there are a lot of systems in place now where, you know, like, because obviously on our podcast, this podcast, you were talking about like men and men with mental health.
Yeah.
And in some ways that can always exist as a schism to women's health. And, you know, obviously people talking about men's issues because, like I said, we've not had the opportunity to increase or work on developing emotional intelligence.
That's it.
And it's crazy because it's like the paradox that is required for you to know you come from a woman and then have some say in how they should be controlled.
I know.
That paradox, look, you are always going to be fucked in your head.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because it's like whoever a man is, I don't care how tall, how strong, every man on this planet has cried for a woman.
Yeah, right.
So for patriarchy to even exist, it's probably the biggest paradox that men are dealing with in terms of their mental health, is that you are born in reverence to a woman.
Yeah.
And at the behest of one.
That's it, yeah.
So now this supposition that they are trying to usurp us or take power from you.
Yeah, man.
It's insane.
Yeah, of course
and it's a duality that will fuck you forever.
Yeah.
Because you're going to live in constant fear that you're going to be, really, you feel, because a woman really is a reflection of your helplessness. And really nothing will undercut the image or the narrative of masculinity than a woman.
Yeah.
Because like I said, it doesn't matter. Strongest man in the world, you cried your fucking eyes out when you were born.
True, man.
Because a woman, you needed a woman to take care of you.
Because
a man couldn't do it. Because you nurse from a woman, that's who they cut the cord from. That's how you'll survive. How she however she conducts herself will determine the manner in which she comes into this world.
Yeah.
So this idea that losing ground to matriarchy, if they wanted us dead, you'd be fucking dead. Simply put, if they wanted us dead, we'd be fucking dead.
True.
So it's like, again, for you to like be like, oh, I'm a Darwinist, but then women have lower rates of mortality in infancy. They're more likely to survive. They are the reason we're able to continue as a species. So there is no interest, be it political or social, for women to suppress men.
No.
Because we need them to survive.
That's right.
And they create us in order for us to survive.
Yeah.
That is an instinct they've had way before you were even any kind of field of study regarding gender. It's the instinct they've always had.
Yeah, man.
Rain, shine, sleet, snow, hail. The reason we're still fucking here is that in the midst of war and famine, women are still like,
women.
I still have to bring my fucking offspring into this world.
That's right, man. Yeah.
So,
you've nailed it, man.
And that's the big part of men and our paradox. And what we struggle with is this fact that, like, we feel we have to create all these ideas. Like, at the end of the evolutionary train of Homo sapien, it's a European man with a spear. The definition of species is an organism that can mate with another organism and produce viable offspring. And that just basically means, like, a lion and tiger can mate, but normally the offspring will be infertile.
Mm.
So that's why lions and lionesses mate. Right, so that's different species. So human beings, we're all Homo sapien, and there's been a lot of pseudoscience created to say that we're different, whether it's like phrenology and the shapes of our heads. And we talk about breeds more than mating, because that's the problem. Like in Europe, we breed more than we mate. So it's like this person's from this stock and they're from this class, and we focus on this rather. But we're all Homo sapien, and it doesn't affect us at all. So we've kind of fucked ourselves in that respect. But because of the fact that you need to define a species, you need a member of that species to be able to pass its genes on. Only women can do that.
Yeah.
So why a woman isn't at the end of the evolutionary chain is the beginning of where our problems begin.
Yeah, man.
And you know.
So you're coming off social media then?
I'm really thinking about it because I was watching, like I said, I was watching this stuff and just saying how much it affects you. And like you said, it's like, you don't even think about it. You look at your phone and then your whole fucking day's ruined.
Whole day.
Yeah, whole day's ruined.
And I've seen you as well. I've seen you.
And I've been so bad for it. So this is why it's come. I've been so bad for it because for me, it was like, I want to prove that it won't affect me. But you can't do that. Long term, it's going to affect you.
Of course it is.
It's going to affect you. Why am I allowing? Because whether or not I think so, these people aren't in this for like, you know, because they're not in this for like, you know, to be bested intellectually. They're not in it to be bested. Like your argument is valid, but they're not arguing to win a point.
No.
Even if your point is valid and it's full of truth, this person is not here to discuss facts. That's not why they're here.
No.
They're trying to be validated by their own bullshit, or they're just trying to get attention.
It's always attention. That's what most of it is.
Yeah.
And I see you, some of your interactions with people, and they come from you've got the knowledge and you've got the facts. And I read it because I know you. I read it, I can see you saying it, like, because I see the reaction, and they're like, oh, you fucking... Yeah. And you're like, no, that's not what I said. This is what I'm saying, this is my point. And I'm like, he's making a valid point.
Yeah.
But that's not about valid points.
It's all about attention. It's about attention. And so for me, I had to realise that A, given my power of my mood to be controlled by this, and my ghost to the machine is always going to damage me, because this isn't a phone. This person can't affect me. If I don't touch this thing, they can't do anything. They can't affect me. They can't change my mood. So I can't. So giving my ghost to the machine has been a problem. And also, it's like, you know, you can write a book or write a blog, and then you can just have your stuff out, or do a podcast, and then I can have a stream of consciousness out, and you don't have to hear this stuff anyway, and you're past it. And you just realize. And once I realized, it's like, because people kept saying, oh, you think you're so, because you got a blue tick. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then I realized this is why they're trying.
It's about your perceived.
It's how I'm perceived by them. So it's like, you realize, like, it's a waste of time.
They're
in much more pain than you are.
And this is it. And this is why they're reacting the way they are. When you, like you said, I put up something that was quite innocuous about Notre Dame. I wasn't pointing fingers at anyone. I'm talking about the billionaires that rushed to help this thing.
Yeah.
Yet people were reacting like I was digging at them, like you said. And that's the same with you.
Yeah.
There was a conversation you were having about cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
And I saw that. And you weren't, everything you said was right.
Yeah, yeah.
And because they felt bad, or they felt
they lose. That's why people say that I'm entitled to my opinion, because an opinion has no basis in fact. There's no factual basis. It's just...
Well, an opinion is an opinion. It's never right or wrong.
It's linked to your ego. Because for example, this is why like a lot more negative ideologies can always prosper, because as long as human beings always have this insecurity about themselves, or have this inferiority complex, then the suggestion of a superiority complex is always going to work. So for example, if you're like, oh, I didn't do so well in school, I don't do so well at work, and someone's like, yeah, but it's all right, you're white. You're like, okay, no, yeah, you need something to believe in. So for some people, it's like their idea of supremacy is all they have.
Yeah.
So as a man, it's like, you know, you're already, so for example, men have massive shortcomings where they may feel inferior to other men, they may feel they're a beta male, and they may feel that they're insecure in like alpha male displays. The suggestion that they're more superior to women, then this is how they rationalise their own inferiority. Oh yeah, but I'm not a woman and blah, blah, blah. So you're like a bitch and blah, blah. There's always ways to get people. And that's the problem, is that like you deal with, there are some people who are more aware of human behaviour than others. And so they're able to manipulate it without actually being involved.
Yeah.
And you know, some people are a lot more enlightened than that. And again, it's because, you know, that's, I guess, a function of privilege and a function of society, whereby, you know, some people have access to education, and a big part of education is being made aware that their position in society is supposed to be superior to the proletariat. Some people, you know, there are some people who go to there's certain schools you can go to, Rich, and if you told somebody, I want to be a corporate lawyer, they'd be like, that's not for you.
Yeah, right.
They'll just shut it down because that's how they've been trained to do so. Whereas people go to other schools where they'd be like, you know, I'm hoping to get a job in like investment banking, maybe manage a hedge fund. Well, of course, here is the context, right. Because it's given to that's the entitlement is more suggested to them. Whereas, in order to maintain the status quo, it's more suggested to you that you can't have this kind of thing.
Yeah,
and so,
my school, they never mentioned the word uni. Career, we had a careers officer that I vaguely remember going to see, but there was no. They did, if you didn't, because I hated school. I just wasn't academic. I was just bored. It was boring. I didn't want to learn about all this old shit from the past.
Yeah, it is boring.
I wasn't interested, even now, because my mum and dad used to take me to museums, and my dad loved all that. I hated it.
Yeah.
And now if I'm away, I'm with comedians, and they go, "Oh, we're going to go to the blah blah museum," I'm like, "No, I'm going to swerve that."
Yeah, exactly.
I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
So, and I lamp it all to school. So school was never. It was never like. School was just school, and then I just stopped going.
It's an institution you're forced to go to.
And
isn't it crazy that, like, for example, we are now having a discussion, we are all aware of the importance of mental health.
Mm.
Now, if you go to book an appointment at a hospital, which you cancel, they don't give a fuck. Why is it then, if you don't give a fuck about school, you're paying tax for school in the same way you pay tax for the NHS.
Yeah.
But if you don't go to school, then they're going to come and try and find you.
Yeah.
Why? What is the insistence on that? Like, no one loses if you don't go to school and you're not requiring any resources like school dinners or additional overheads to maintain you as a student. Why is someone going out their way to find you?
Yeah.
So obviously someone has an interest in you completing this programming.
That's right. Yeah.
Someone has an interest in that, and the problem is as well is that like school was very standardized. So even in Harvard, they had an experiment, and a Harvard professor called Gardner, and he identified these 7 types of intelligence. Now, it means in Harvard, they are going far enough to work out where people are able to excel, you know, because it's an Ivy League school. Whereas if you're in a public school in the UK, for example, where very clearly you've forged a career, which has proven that you are very creative. Mm. And also, you know, your job requires you to be very loquacious and very articulate with words and almost subvert vocabulary.
Yeah.
Now, if I was to ask your English teacher that when you was in school, he's not going to say that shit about you.
No.
But you make more money than he does doing that now.
Yeah, man.
So you do it better than him. So why is someone not there trying to identify the aptitudes that you have based on maybe these models of 7 types of intelligence and being like, okay, well, we know Rich is good, has a way with words and he can talk to people. Emotional intelligence is a massive boon to have. This is why people who are psychologists and psychiatrists make a shitload of money.
That's right.
You obviously have a way of building rapport with people and have, you know, a certain level of emotional intelligence. Otherwise, you couldn't do your job as a compere, for example. No one is there identifying that.
No.
And again, it's the paradox is that how is anybody aspiring for a meritocratic society where we're all doing better if you have a skill, but someone has an interest in a commercial interest, which it always is, for you to stay at this level, so you're not able to realise that. And we're still, and even though we live in an era now where literally you can find somebody anywhere on the planet, you are turning, just your phone can produce technology and images and stimulation that would have been a dream as a child.
That's right.
And yet you're supposed to ignore this and still sit in a classroom and listen to one person speak.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to ignore the fact that this person is telling you this is how you perform science, but you are not a scientist.
That's right.
And I am supposed to give all of my power over to you under the idea that you are the optimal person to teach me this.
That's right.
I don't ask you for your grades. I don't know how you passed this module.
I bet you would have done as well.
It's a fair question to ask. If someone's insisting you learn this, if I said to you, Rich, this is how it's supposed to be done, and you were like, well, how was it when you did it? And I was like, well, I haven't done this. What are you talking about? You'd be like, well, how the fuck would I trust you? and it's just these are all very simple questions that we never ask. In the same way that, like, conversation about police brutality, we've already discussed how we are aware how post-traumatic stress disorder can affect members of the military and make them nigh on homicidal or suicidal. The police see the same level over a more sustained period of violence and apathy and, you know, like the depth of humanity.
But
no one ever says, are they okay? Are they going out and developing a psychosis and visiting this brutality on other people?
Yeah, man.
My friend works for a company that builds piping. If I go and see him, he can't smoke weed because he'll be urine tested.
Yeah.
When you hear about stuff with the police, if you run a race too quickly, they'll be like, we should test this person's blood.
Yeah, right.
You kill a child, no one's ever like, shouldn't we test this guy for his urine? Know what he's on, you know?
Let's find out,
Because the police, you know, you're dealing with a lot of scary shit. You know, sometimes you're dealing with some very powerful people. We know what, like, you know, villains or gangsters look like. So a lot of time you got to take, you know, you may have to take like fucking steroids just to keep up with the people you're running after.
Yeah.
Then your typical day is a beat. You may see some fucked up shit. Now, if you're seeing excitement, you have an adrenaline release. So when you finish an adrenaline in your system, what can you not do? Can't sleep.
No.
So, sorry, if you're a police person, you may be prescribed with sleeping pills. Or if you're seeing trauma that you're not used to, you're going to be prescribed antidepressants. Yep. All of these things have side effects, which we never discuss.
No.
And again, because you're in school and you've been taught, I have to raise my hand to talk to for this fuck who I don't even know.
Yeah.
They could have been sniffing coke the whole weekend. But you don't know, but you are taught.
True.
School, which is one of the reasons why it's so emphasized, because you're taught to just concede to authority. Well, this person says so, so I must know.
That's right.
There's people in the 50s now, or your grandmother's age, when she was your age, they'd be like, smoking? Hell yeah. I'm a doctor. I know it's caused for
you. Used to give me in hospitals.
It'd be fine, yeah. They smoke in hospitals. So it's just...
It's funny that you bring that up, because my... I suppose he would be my... He was my stepson. He's now he's now a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a police officer. I'll keep banging the table. He's a police officer. I don't know where he is, but it's in... Might be around the Croydon area. But he messaged me after the first one of these and just said, you know, talking about mental health, because you don't realise what... He's only just become a police officer, and you don't realise what they have to deal with on a daily basis.
It's fast.
Someone freaking out in a supermarket, someone else, and like you say, they have to turn up and they have to assess the thing. They can't just go rolling in and just bang them up.
Yeah, and remember,
they have to go, right, police, let's work out why.
You need to be a policeman, you know?
No.
Think about how, you have to go to university to be a policeman, and you're given a gun. And you are put on the front line.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about just even us even learning to even manage our own psychology. You're out there on the front line dealing with the psychology of the entire, of all of society.
Yeah.
And you're given policies which you may not even understand that you have to enforce.
Yeah.
At the expense of your job. How to suggest, and I'm not an advocate for the police and brutality, but to suggest that these people are seeing and doing what they're doing and no one is bringing it home and no one's being affected by it and they can still go and perform law enforcement without becoming fucked or... or that corruption would exist in the Catholic Church, but not in law enforcement. That can only be a function of this cognitive dissonance or you being in school. And for me personally, I think school is, that's where it begins.
Yeah,
that's where the problems begin.
True.
That's where mental problems begin. If you're going to have debate and have discussions and about things that motivate you, it's done within the confines of this person's put up their hand, this person puts their hand, or it's time to go, so the conversation ends.
And you're not achieving, so you're letting everyone down, you're letting yourself down.
Yeah.
So you got that self-doubt building up because you're like, well, oh God, he's got those grades, but I haven't got those grades. And just because you've got different intellect, like you say.
And it's not inferior. It's just
different.
One works where the other one works. You know, it's like, for example, some people who have, like comedians I know who may have physical disabilities, but obviously their cerebral capacity.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the smartest men in the world, like Stephen Hawking.
That's right.
You don't have your kinesthetic intelligence. You don't have your physical faculties, but cerebrally, you're more intelligent than most people on the planet.
I used to work with children with mental and physical disabilities. We used to do this thing called Kids Camp. We used to take them to Thought Park and things like that. And that's where I learned that very same thing. Just because their body's not working, their brain is still there. And I've had it.
I'm probably overcompensating. So it probably works better and harder than most other people.
And they're frustrated because they can't, because their thoughts are far superior to anything I could cut, but they can't get it out. So they sit there and they bite themselves and they freak out because they can't.
Feel something.
Yeah, and you can't. And other people, I've had this at gigs. I had someone in the front row a little while ago. And he was in a wheelchair and his mum was with him and he was communicating with a book, like he could just point at this book. Yeah. His brain was there, man. He was laughing and he was there, but to actually communicate his thoughts was a problem. And so I had a chat with him and I'm like, right, I said, you got swear words in that book? And he started freaking out because he couldn't get to the pages quick enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was brilliant. And you go, right, he's there. He's fucking there. And we had such a good time. His name was Sam. And it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And it was fucking great.
Because and that's just because you're meeting him on an equal level.
Yeah.
Just to have a normal exchange, which, again, from social engineering, he's fucking deprived of that.
Yeah.
So that's what, and even the swear word thing, swear words, and the reason why people enjoy them is just that because we have a common etiquette and we have a common narrative. So when someone defies that and they're like, fuck, especially when you hear a kid say it, it's like, holy shit. Because it's just that small bit of defiance that just changes the stream of consciousness. That's why people go for it. But it's like, again, with disabilities, like we're so behind on the research we can do with that. Like even autism and stuff like, and most people who have autistic children and stuff, you can tell you that there'll be one instance whereby that child and their ability to like focus on one particular thing, whether it's if they excel numerically or just their idea to retain a certain level of information. The harder we work to understand stuff like mental health, like how that will be the next stage of our evolution.
Yeah.
But what we're doing instead, and maybe worryingly, is that we are giving over that power to artificial intelligence. Mm. And I'm not saying necessarily that artificial intelligence is necessarily bad, but you know, like Nietzsche said, it's like God makes man and man kills God.
Yeah.
And we are doing the same with artificial intelligence. This is something we've created naturally,
yeah.
Which is now, like I said, is basically now working like a, because it doesn't need to like be like anything cataclysmic.
Mm.
We've seen how people are affected just when people find out what people think of them,
yeah.
How much that can destroy you. And that's what social media provides, a laxative for that same mind sphincter you're supposed to have to give you a filter. Social media is a laxative, so now you're verbal diarrhea. So now we're all in the shit of our consciousness and stuff like that. So it's like, if your brain is a stream of consciousness, then social media is like a sewer,
because
it makes you dump shit out, and like it becomes a cesspit of like human consciousness. And some of the stuff you're like, what the fuck is that at my feet? And once you take, so it's probably safer if you take a walk in your own head a lot of the time. So for me, so what I deal with, I guess, more on a day to day, like mentally, is the fact that like I made the choice that I didn't want to be inhibited by social convention, how I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that 20 years ago, being around and having conversations, talking about stuff like gender fluidity and being around people who are androgynous or trans,
yeah.
I may have been a bit more apprehensive to speak to people like that. Not because I didn't like them or predisposed, but
just
I was like,
understand.
I would think, yeah. What do I have in common with them?
Yeah.
After spending the time to unlearn that stuff, there is nobody I am adverse to speaking to.
No.
There's nobody I'm adverse to interacting with, because why would I? Anything about the aesthetic is immaterial, doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately though, the other side of that is that as a fucking heterosexual cisgender black man, people, when you open your mouth, people look at you're fucking crazy, because they're not used to someone speaking like this.
Nah, cool.
So again, me speaking like this and defying what is the aesthetic means people shut down. So critics and stuff, they're not used to someone speaking like this. No. So they're like, well, he's taking on too much. And then they all have an Icarus complex, like, oh, he thinks he's too smart, he's trying to take on too much stuff. My peers are like, what the fuck? Because people think, because I pick up on all the small nuanced stuff, which it's just always been my nature anyway.
Yeah.
But, and that's positive, because it means you notice stuff and you can pick up on, for our line of work, like I said, you're picking up on psychological and physical cues. But if I'm saying to somebody, here's my problem, to most people, he's going to destroy me. It's going to destroy me. So people build up defenses straight away. And I find most people, it's like, then they'll shut down and be like, you're being aggressive, you're accusing me of stuff. And so then I leave it alone. But unfortunately with me and with most people, if you don't get that resolution of having an interaction with somebody, then once you're left in your own head, just going to, like,
so
a tumor.
Do you find a lot of the time, it's that you overcomplicate a situation.
Yeah, you overanalyze it because I've not had the interaction with other people, and it's not always the case. But like I'd say, for me, the amount of people I can talk to openly, like outside of something like a podcast, like close friends, comedians are good to talk to, but mainly like close friends, my sister and my manager, because people think I'm just trying to tell them that they're a piece of shit, and it's not that. But it's like I'd rather have everything out and just let's have all of our insecurities and stuff. Have all this stuff out, address all of it, and, you know, have a therapy session between someone you know and trust.
Yeah.
Because that, obviously, we are lacking that, which is why therapy and popular pop psychiatry has prospered so much, is because we're too afraid to have this interaction with people that we share a bed with.
Yeah, man.
And it's fucking crazy. Like, don't let someone inside of your body if you're not going to let them inside of your fucking head. Do you know what I mean?
That's nice. So true,
that's
man.
That's it, man.
And going back to what you were saying, like self-love and what I did when I had counselling and things like that was realise that, like, it starts with me.
Yeah.
And in order for everything else around me to improve.
It always does.
Yeah, like you say, just simple things like, okay, taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Start eating a bit healthier.
Yeah.
Make your bed. Put your clothes away.
Just small things that small rituals that unclutter your mind.
Yeah.
And it's holographic principle, so it repeats. It's small things, because you notice, like, when you're fucked, it's like, no one gives a fuck about me.
That's right.
When you're moving, and you, like, and you don't need anyone's help, people are more inclined to help you.
Of course they are, man.
Because, because like I said, they're seeing the best part of you, or what they perceive the best part of you. It activates the best part of them. It's like, oh, this person's going. A rolling stone gathers no moss. Man. That person looks like they're doing something. I want to be part of it. So,
yes.
And that's, I said it, because we're a social species. So if you're aspiring and appearing to evolve, the people within your immediate social circle will want to do the same because you appear to be moving. So
a simple example, this podcast.
As
suddenly people are wanting to, they wanted me to do stuff, they want me to do gigs. And because then you're like going, oh man,
They see the positivity,
Sitting back going, fuck this, man.
Yeah.
Why are they, they've got that? Why have they got that? What's going on? Yeah. Why haven't I got that?
And the thing is, and that's it. And it's not that it's why have they got that, it's that them having that reminds me I don't have anything.
Yeah.
That's what the issue is. It's not them.
Yeah,
it's not about them. Yeah, it's not about them. It's that by seeing them having it, it makes me feel like I don't have. And that's, again, a large part of that comes from is capitalist engineering, whereby we work within what appears to be a zero-sum economy, where it's like, for me to gain, someone has to lose.
Yeah, yes.
And we keep trying to make ourselves all right with that. But you to have those two, the idea of zero-sum and humanity, where you're a social species, but you're supposed to be out for number one, they can't coexist.
No.
It's very hard for it to coexist. So... So like my friend said yesterday as well, he's like, you know what, you think about it, like, even if you did get like, imagine you're a millionaire with a house and no one comes to visit you.
So,
because obviously, because he knows I sometimes get anxious about my career, and he's like, yeah, it's all well and good, but remember, I was like, you're a millionaire nowadays, and you're going to go on holiday and have to make new friends every time you go on holidays. That's, it's fucking long. And buying friends and stuff. And again, that stuff will take a toll on you. Because when you talk about like suicide and mental health, people most affected by that are middle class people, you know. Middle class men are the highest number of suicides. And I think the reason why is because, I guess, when you're from the working class, then because such a large part of your existence is survival, then you already feeling the, you're feeling the thrill of life just trying to get by every day. When you're in the ruling class, well, your incentive is to maintain power. So you're controlling the middle classes and the working classes. So there's a motivation there because, well, you've obviously been taught that you're better than everyone. And also you're working to maintain, like, control is a massive thrill in terms of, and also you project control because there's parts of you can't control within yourself. With politicians and stuff, it's like, because if you're a politician and stuff and you knew you actually had power, you wouldn't need to appeal to people for to be elected as such. You wouldn't need to. If you're a natural leader, you don't necessarily need to be like, vote for me and I'll make your promises.
You make it happen.
It's holographic principle. You're doing something now, Rich. Because you're leading by example, people are like, oh, well, Richard's doing good, so now I want him involved. Whereas if you were like, oh, give me a gig and I'll do this.
Everyone's like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
So it's the same principle as a politician. You don't need to aspire for power if you already have it. So the ruling class, their interest is whatever we're lacking. Because like I said, they're born the same way you are. They're born in the same way, covered in shit and mucus and crying like anybody else is. But it's this idea of trying to separate themselves from this reality. So they try and control other people. Now, the problem is when you're in the middle class, you're in the middle, whereby your most of your basic physical needs and air, food, water, shelter are met. So you're not out here just trying to survive. And, you know, a lot of people came, you see strong men I came from the streets, I had to fight for everything I had. Like, we all know that noble story of, like, I fought for everything I had. You don't have that fight when you're in middle class. Also, you aren't really in control because you just do better than the working class, but you're not the ruling class where you can determine policies that may ultimately benefit you or be a detriment to you or your family. So you're just in this limbo whereby you have a superior standard of living to these guys, which gives you a little bit of an obliviousness of like, I guess the, just the human, experiencing the human spirit of triumphing and evolving and surviving. And you know, the whole Darwin experience is kind of being deprived of you because of capitalism. And then you're not in power. So you're just in the middle, like you're like the middle child. And again, and then because of that, well, the people up here who seek to control people, they don't empathize with you because they only care about control. People beneath you, and this is the complex that a lot of straight white men are dealing with, as essentially the global middle class, is that they're like, no, my life isn't perfect either. Well, we're all going to be like, how the fuck isn't it? You're a white man, straight white man. You would may have inner turmoil, but because the suggestion aesthetically is that your life is perfect, you can't gain empathy from the control, the ruling, the working class either. So we're like, we won't give a fuck because you're doing better than we are. You're in the middle now. So then now this detachment and this isolation comes, whereby now you're seeing the narrative where women don't trust you. And women talk about rape culture. What the fuck? And then, you know, the black and brown people were like, we don't trust you. So now you're more and more isolated, and it's like, yeah, well... Right.
And isolation, as we've talked about before on other podcasts, it's the worst thing for
you. So then when someone comes along and it's like, no, it's okay to be a white guy, the problem is they're trying to take it away from you.
Yeah. Oh, they are trying to take it away. I'm not a racist.
No, we're not racist. Come on, it's different. We're centrist, and this is populism. Mm. And just come this way. It's a little bit... Well, this just sounds a bit right-wing. No, it's not right-wing. It's alt-right. Come on, man. We're just trying to have something for ourselves. And, you know, this is what I mean. When you have a whole... collective consciousness and collective adolescent consciousness, mm-hmm. most people are their worst people in school. That's where you're trying to conform the most, which is why now it's a lot easier to see this mad stratification of human beings now, where it's like, okay, but we're trans and we're feminists, but we're TERFs, so we're not feminists, but we don't like trans. It's very different. Yeah. And then we're black feminists, and then we're Asian feminists, and we're right wing, but we're Hindu right wing, and then we're Muslim, but we're Sunni, and but we're westernized, and blah, blah, and we're Sufi, and so it. Very easy nowadays to see that in the height of our technological advance, motherfuckers saying the Earth is flat again. how crazy is that?
All of that you've just said, all those different labels and things that people are, and then flat earthers have gone, well, we haven't got something that identifies us as to make us important.
Yeah.
The Earth's flat.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So it's another thing, because it's human beings striving to be important.
So scared. And also, it's because social media has given us the God power that we always spoke about, because it means, because if you were to qualify Godhood, there's three things. It's omnipotence, where you're like all powerful, omnipresence, so you could be everywhere at the time, and omniscient, so you know everything. That's mm-hmm. your classification of a God. This is what social media gives you, because you're trending, you know where everything's happening in the world, which is why anxiety is growing, because before, there'd be a few tragic news stories when you read a tabloid or a broadsheet. Now you need to know every fucking shit thing that's happened in the world. Man. It's too much for us to handle.
Yeah.
Then you have like your... omnipotence, where like, you know, you're all powerful because pretty much everything is at the touch of your thumbs. Mm. So it's very hard for you to aspire to stuff, and you can create a false reality. So why are you going to aspire? So if you look at the line of social media and the line of childhood obesity, they're probably a big congruence there. And then, you have, what's the name? Omniscience is all knowing, because now you can know how people think, who probably may not have been nice people, but you could work alongside them because no one's revealing their real self under corporate conditions. But now it's been revealed, and now we're seeing tweets and stuff from 6 years ago. So now you're knowing how people think. It's a lot for human beings to handle this godhood that we've asked for. We weren't supposed to have it. So now people are like, oh shit, we are now standing at the precipice of human evolution. Mm. And that is scaring people. Let's go back to where the Earth is flat. That was safe. That was okay then.
That was safe.
Yeah,
let's not write on parchment.
Women did what they were told, and blah, blah, your children, and blah, blah, blah. So you're seeing a lot of people.
Let's have turnip for dinner.
When I see like grown people, like, you know, because this is how we're living. Like, you know, people are in their 30s and living, you know, sharing spaces with other people who they don't know very well. People in their 30s and now still living like students, and you know, and you still people, and then people, and because of that, arrested development and long-term stuff, it's like people got housemates and stuff who don't clean up after themselves, and people used to still maintain this adolescence. Whereas if you started moving into your own home and owning your own home, then you would need to observe more responsibility and you'd be more accountable for kids.
Yeah.
We're doing all this stuff later than we used to, and people have been able to perpetuate their adolescence a lot longer than they used to, so that people can be obstinate and people can be vague and they can be hard to deal with in the house. There is no surprise that with this prolonged idea of people living in houses longer than they are, people dating longer than they are, that 42% of marriages are ended in divorce. Because it's suggested to you that choice is suggested to you so much that everyone's just become spoiled.
Everyone's spoiled.
Yeah. You know, because, you know, you never had the benefit of being outside of your town. Whereas now you can go and you can travel a lot more, and you can see a lot more, and you can interact. You don't even have to leave your house to interact with people from another country on a very intimate level.
Yeah.
So people are now given this illusion of choice when, again, we haven't evolved that much. You need someone, like, even though it seems to be nice and be validated, everyone just wants to be loved, and everyone wants someone that gets them.
And like you say, anxiety's on the rise. And I was about to say, Liam Capaldi, the singer that's out at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
I was listening to him on the radio on the way in, and he had a panic attack while he was on stage. Couldn't handle it. Yeah.
Lewis Capaldi,
that's it. Yeah, sorry. And he couldn't handle it. And he goes, I'm going to have to do this my last song. And I was listening to it. Old school Rich was going, oh, for fuck's sake, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course it's stressful. We just got to get on with it. But then I was like, wow, it's affecting people like him on that level.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was going, he's like, right, and at my gigs now, at the next gig he's going to do, there's going to be people there that will specialise, like nurses, and they're ready for people.
Yeah.
When it all becomes too much, and you go, fuck, what are we creating? That you've got to have these people on hand, like tents, where someone's watching the gig and they go, I can't handle this.
Because you have people that, I'm saying, is overstimulated. People are experiencing godhood, and like even biblically speaking, no one's supposed to see God. They used to say in the Bible, if you see God, you die, because you can't fucking handle it.
Yeah,
and that's what you're creating. You're giving people who have not had the mental faculties to even take a walk within their own brains.
Mm.
Now being given, bombarded with knowledge. Yeah. And knowledge is power, but power can short circuit shit, man. This is people, so exactly, this is people's fuses going.
Yeah, where that's it's why, like, it's nice to take a step back and look and up.
Because remember, you could guess how people were thinking about you, but it was never a problem because you didn't know for sure.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, everyone hates me. I know they do because I can see it. My phone. Yeah. What's this person thinking? What's this person thinking? You haven't had the training to do that. You're going fucking crazy.
It's true, man.
It's going to drive you crazy, man.
That's why I love it. Stepping out, reading the book.
Take a walk in your own mind. Draw a picture. Write a letter. Write something. Write your thoughts down. Call somebody and say hello to them, man. Just hearing human voice and these interactions, it will do so well for you. And even the thing is, like, because people always say, like, oh, you know, you're so lucky doing this and stuff like that. And it's like, I said, you know, I don't have to derive too much prestige from what we do, because this is something you would have done with your friends and enjoyed doing it, as I did, because it was always that release for you and that catharsis, right, that I can talk to my friends and have a laugh with my friends. It eases us, all of us. It's an icebreaker. And, you know, I think with most people, just need to do the same kind of thing, where it's like, just spend some time with your friends, man. Like, when you get to that quantum of joy, when you're with your friends and you're laughing, and we're having a fucking laugh, you're cracking up on the sofa. Just that small quantum of that instance when we're laughing, I don't care if I'm rich, I don't care if I'm poor, black or white, it's just that one instance of joy is what everyone should like prescribe themselves at some point in their daily life.
True, man. Thanks, man.
No, thanks, bro. I'm sorry, I spoke so much, but like,
this has been brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much, man. Perfect. Yeah, nice,
thanks,
me too, man.
Thanks
thank
for coming.
But I'm saying, no, I appreciate it, because like I said, it's even for me as well, sometimes just being able to have a stream of consciousness where I can just get this off.
Get it out, man.
Because this is just the speed that my head goes at. So just getting it off without, because people feel very daunted for hearing you talking like that. Just think, where is he? This is just me, like I said, for me, it's like, I'm being able to see the world in new eyes, and I enjoy that, and I enjoy like having to like, because even me, like, whether I may have very subconscious sexist beliefs and stuff, and it's being able to like just go straight and confront and be like, what about women scares you?
Yeah.
And it's like that admission, sometimes they might hurt me, I've been hurt before and I'm scared I might be hurt, and if a girl says I'm ugly or my dick is small, then I just and once you confront that, it's like, but is it really going to be a problem?
No.
So when people, well, then women will take over. So what? Give it a go. Yeah. Why not? They would. We've been fine so far.
Yeah, they smashed it.
Because it's not going well now. So try something new.
Try something new.
You know. My message. My message is love for people, man. Of yourself first, and then once you do that, everything else will
absolutely
follow.
Absolutely, man.
So enjoy. Thank you so much for having me. And also, always thank you for always being like a good voice in comedy as long as I've been doing it, man. So I appreciate that.
Man.
Thank you for having me.
Insane in the membrane. So that was Dane Baptiste. I mean, incredible. He just came in, he sat down, and off he went. And Paul and I, we were just sat there just looking at each other going, holy shit. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, it was insane how he went off on one. It was fucking great. Loved it. Loved every minute. The time just flew by as well. It was like, all of a sudden, it was like, oh shit, we've got to wrap this up. It was incredible. Absolutely brilliant. Hopefully you loved that as much as we love making it. Next time, Reece James picks holes in my interview technique.
A good childhood, a good life. Apart from all that, apart from being asked to do anything.
That's too vague a question, I'd say, Rich.
Was it? Yeah, this is the thing, I'm not Paxman, so.
Have you had a good life?
Had a good life, mate?
You know what, I'd actually love Paxman to ask that to an MP.
Can you imagine that?
They're talking.
Yeah, what's your problem?
Yeah.
What was your life like before
they're
this?
Talking about legislation, quite a lot of detail, and then just, rather than pressing him going, give me an answer, he just goes, you had a good life?
Yeah.
And then just see them blindsided by that, going, well, oh, good point, good question. Oxbridge was good.
Thanks to Zen on Gaku for the music and Dale Adams for the inspiration. Producer was Paul Daniels at darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram. This is Rich Wilson. Take care. Ta-da.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.